Okay, yeah, good afternoon. I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to talk here. So I probably cannot anything new to all what you heard about density functional theory, because our group is coming more from density matrix theory. But I think I can add to one of the questions posed in the morning by Angel Rubio. Looking at excitation, propagation, and relaxation of non-equilibrium states, that means including dissipation and the temporal dynamics of those states. So many people have contributed to this work, and I'm going to address the contribution during the talk. So just let me introduce our group at the Technical University. What we are doing with this density matrix theory, we are looking at radiation and electron transfer processes in different systems. So coming from semiconductor physics and quantum dots, coupled quantum dots or quantum wells, we try to look at light harvesting complexes and at confined electron gases such as in carbon nanostructures, surface structures, and inter-subband transitions in quantum wells. So we try to apply these methods on a broad range. And looking at the topic at the conferences, I thought that would be good to state that if you come from density matrix dynamics, we usually have bad interaction matrix elements because we just don't care. So it's a good statement to improve on then the density matrix dynamics with interaction matrix elements beyond simple model wave functions, which is often used in my community. And so to make the way to describe the ultra-fast dynamics of maybe real materials. And this is already the outline of my talk. I would like to introduce a little bit into the theory of quantum dynamics, what we can do with density matrix theory, in particular looking at the timescales involved there. And then I go through examples where the complexity of the wave functions is increased step by step. For the quantum dots, I'm going to show you simple model wave functions and KP theory. Then for graphene, tight binding calculations, and for surfaces, we used in collaboration with the Fritz Haber Institute, DFT. So just as a first thing, where we would like to go, I'm showing here an experiment, which is the luminescence as a function of frequency or energy of a semiconductor quantum dot. Here already you can see that simple wave functions, this is the theory, this is the experiment, like a Gaussian wave function, you assume a quantum dot is a confined potential, so the electron can move there and you solve just for the harmonic oscillator and look at binding energies and stuff like this. You never get these spectra right, not the widths. However, if you already increase a little bit to KP wave functions, then you already get the widths, and it's on two orders of magnitudes also where you can compare them to the experiment. This would be one motivation to go for better wave functions in density matrix theory. The other one, this is just an example where we look at spatial-temporal dynamics. This is a slab of silicon, and we calculated here the matrix elements using DFT, the Kohn-Chem orbitals. And after a light pulse enters the sample, you do see that you generate electrons here at the surface structure, and you go to a non-equilibrium situation. These electrons scatter with phonons. The electrons are scattered all over the sample here, as you see, and then they move back again, so go back to equilibrium here at the end of the time propagation. These are the type of situations we would like to address. And now I'm going through the theory, how we calculate these curves, and where are the problems? So first of all, if you look for optics, then you look always for dipole densities. And dipole density, typically from quantum mechanics, you can define in the following way. You take wave functions, a complete set of wave functions, like here this phi, depending on r, so stationary solutions of the Schrödinger equation. You have a dipole operator here, r. And you take the next wave functions, and then there's the time dynamics included here in the density matrix element, which is shown here. The same for the electron density as a function of time and space. You have these wave functions, and you have the density matrix elements. And you can think about these density matrix elements as the probability or the transition probability to go from a state I to a state j. So we have two ingredients, the single particle wave functions and these expansion coefficients from the density matrix theory. And we described them in second quantization with these generation operators and these destruction operators to make sure that they describe the transition between generating an electron in state I and destructing it in state J. The density has only the same in indices here, since it counts the numbers of electrons in a certain state. To get these single particle states, we use several methods with increasing complexity, from effective mass wave functions, tight binding, and density functional calculations for complex systems. Density matrix, we have to solve somehow the von Neumann equation for the density matrix, because this contains the time dependence. And this gives us then, if we take then the average here with the corresponding states, we do get here the time dynamics of the coefficients we need to calculate then at the ends of the electron density as a function of space and time. So, how do we do that? Let me first start with our model system. We introduce the density matrix via the second quantization using generation and destruction operators. And first in the system, we somehow assume that we do have these states, like the for a complete set of electronic states. Like we could also include in a later calculation correlated or Hartree-Fock ground states. That depends always on the system we do have. We have some excited states, and now they are, if you look for optics, for instance, you generate an electron in an upper state, you destruct here an electron, and you couple to the external field modes here, and this describes you then optical excitation and emission. And if you have a strong light pulse, which does this with several electrons, you create a non-equilibrium situation where you also have then scattering between the holes here and the electrons here, if you have several of these optical transitions. On the other hand, you have to couple all of these transitions. They are coupling to the environment, in particular to reservoirs like phonon modes. And these reservoir modes, they take out the energy from these electronic systems. And dissipate the energy in after the optical excitation. So all of these modes, they have to be described in second quantization with generation and destruction operators. And this is, for instance, here, if you do a full quantum description, this would be a light mode. For instance, it could be a cavity with the mode N. It generates an electron, and this operator destructs a photon, I should say. So in the cavity, we do the same to the phonons. They have an indice alpha, which counts the mode index, and in the solid, for instance, then the wave number. So and then we do try to apply to these second quantized theories. Then it's the idea to get the average with the density matrix to calculate all these dipole interactions and the electron density. The next step is that I should show you, in principle, at least, all the interactions we typically need to include in such a Hamiltonian. Starting from the von Neumann equation, we need to define the Hamiltonian, which determines the dynamics of the during the time development. And in the Hamiltonian, we typically, that depends on our system, but both interactions can be treated in density matrix theory. The Coulomb interaction and the electron phonon or photon interaction. And if you look here, if you like those diagrams, you find them here in the written in these Hamiltonians, like that in the Hamiltonian, you have to write down a certain matrix element which describes the probability of this transition that you destroy two electrons, wave number K and L, and generate two electrons, I and J. The same with the phonons. There you have a matrix element where all the information about the material goes in, and the dynamics within the phonon operators and within the electron operators, where one electron J is destructed and you generate one electron I here by emission or absorption of a photon. Typically, also this depends on the sample. We need to divide between optical and acoustical phonons. So now the defined the Hamiltonian. This is a many-body problem. To solve the von Neumann equation, we need to make sure that we make clear which approximations come into the theory. And let me go through this step by step. So we start basically with the von Neumann equation, where here's the Hamiltonian, which determines the time dynamics. And we rewrite this in terms of superoperators, where here this L does not mean anything other than the commutator with H, with the full Hamiltonian. For instance, if you look at the interaction of the system, which is our electronic system, and the bath, so at the end, very often we treat the phonons as a heat bath. We have a matrix element here, which then where all the microscopic information about the material comes in. Here are the wave functions. Here is the phonon mode. You do have these phonon and electron operators. And then this defines also a Liouville operator, a superoperator, which makes the commutator with the density matrix. And then we apply projection techniques. Because we are only interested in the system variables, like the electronic coordinates, we can trace out all the bath or the phonon coordinates. That doesn't mean at this stage not that this is a heat bath, but this can also be generalized that you have non-equilibrium phonons. So we apply this projection P, like tracing out the phonons, and it's orthogonal component. And then we get an equation which is very famous, the Nakajima 20 equation, which we use then in density matrix for our different purposes. So you have the time development of the system density matrix. You have the system Liouvillean, which describes the dynamics if the system would be alone in the world. And then you have the interaction with the surrounding. And I just want to point out several points here. So first of all, you see that there's the interaction acting several times in this equation. So you have multiple scatterings. This means that you have multiple scatterings of the electronic propagation with the phonons, like here and here. If you, for instance, neglect this interaction here in the exponent, you get the second order Born approximation, which, for instance, gives you Fermi's golden rule. On the other hand, you do have more than Fermi's golden rule because you do have here a memory time. You see, this is a time integral here, which acts in this differential equation. So you count for all times which are before time t. So you do have memory in the system. And this accounts for that an interaction takes a certain time t. This is because electrons and phonons are actually treated as waves, and they don't interact like particles, like balls. So that means this equation is, of course, much too complicated. So for all things, we have to specify now our application. First of all, there are situations where you can treat these exponentials in an efficient way. And very often, or there are a few model systems, I should say, where you can really sum up all the contributions. This is often true in the so-called linked cluster expansion, where you can actually count for all of these interactions. So you can actually count all the electron-phonon interactions. Then, on the other hand, approximations correspond to this time t prime here. So I said this is somehow the memory time which an interaction does take place. And first of all, if you keep this time t prime and the time integration, you're in the fully quantum kinetic regime. So that means all the electrons, they interact more or less like waves, and you get an interference here of all the states here with the phonons here. That can be an n phonon process you can get out of the equation. So you have an interference of these waves, and this makes all the memory, or we do say a non-Markovian interaction. Get rid of this time integration. Then you come to a kinetic regime where you have energy-conserving collisions, and from this integral, a delta function, which makes sure that there's energy conservation appears. This is on the level of master equations, and this is on the level of quantum kinetic equations, where we take this memory time into account. And at the end, if you want to do hydrodynamics, you can even assume from these equations a local equilibrium, and then you get temperature in and stuff like this, and you only describe distribution functions, you count electrons, but there's no coherence any longer between two states included. Okay, for all this, I do have more or less examples with me, and I think I go through it step by step. So my first example are quantum dot spectra, semiconductor quantum dots, and their temporal dynamics. So in this situation, for a certain model system where you take only a few confined levels into account, you can go really beyond perturbation theory, and you can construct exact models. So we keep the quantum kinetics, so the time the interaction takes here, and can calculate basically these processes. Let me introduce the model system. So we have a quantum dot where we have a few confined levels, and typically you generate these quantum dots by having different semiconductor materials here. So you have a particle in the box, more or less. You have confined levels and optical transitions here, and we are interested in coupling these optical transitions here to phonons, and we have optical and acoustical phonons in the system, and leaving out all the unbound states, then the problem is exactly solvable. If you look for this optical transition here between two confined states, then there's a bunch of phonons somehow interacting with the system. However, since the electron doesn't know where to go with the scattering, we call this a pure defacing process. There's no energy relaxation. So the phonons, they somehow wiggle here around and make virtual transitions for this electron or for these optical transitions. On the other hand, if you couple then to these off-resonant levels here, the unbound levels, for instance, then you get real transitions, because a multi-phonon process can scatter the electrons or the holes here out of the dot and couple them to the unbound states. So what do we get? First of all, if we do the calculation for such a two-level quantum dot, this is the system where you actually can solve the whole series expansion in this Nakajima 20 equation. So I told you that if you make the optical transition, this is now 90 degrees reversed here, the optical transition from the ground state to the upper state, then all these phonons wiggle here around, and in the optical absorption spectrum, you do see a sharp line here in the middle as a function of frequency, which corresponds to the optical transition without phonons, and you do see a broad band, which is coming from that the electron doesn't know where to go, so it somehow has to decide within time energy uncertainty. It just can wiggle around, and you see in the optical spectrum at the different temperatures all these optical transitions here. In particular, you see asymmetry, which is because of spontaneous phonon emission and phonon absorption at different temperatures. So if you plot these, this actually is calculated in time domain. You apply a short pulse to the system, and then you see how these optical transitions interact with the phonons. And what you actually see this is the polarization or the dipole density, that you get a very sharp rise due to the pulse as a function of time. This is a picosecond time scale. Then you get a fast interference here, which destroys the coherence in the system. This is because all of these phonon modes couple now to this two-level transition, makes it broad, and in time, if you do have some interference here, then they interfere, and you see in the spectrum this broad band. The rest is the zero phonon transition in the middle, and this decays just by the coupling to the radiation field. It re-emits the radiation in the vacuum modes. This is a model you now already can compare to the experiments, and this was the appetizer at the beginning of the talk, which I had already on the transparency. This was the calculation we have done, where I showed that we can compare now to a luminescent spectrum here as a function of the energy in comparison to our theory. And we already see here for these simple systems where most people take effective mass models that we have to improve on the wave functions to get some agreement. And everything has to do then with the matrix elements. You solve the time dynamics for the density matrix theory. However, if you don't have good matrix elements in the Hamiltonian, then you get wrong results. So this is at least then you cannot compare to experiments. So then I told you if you couple now this optical active transitions to more transitions, for instance, to the unbound state out of the quantum dot, Then you can include also many phonon interactions here. For instance, because the quantum dots typically are more deep than a single phonon energy. Actually, I should have said this. This is indium arsenide material quantum dots. You need many phonons to bridge the gap here. And this also can be done in the theory. And here we applied this Markovian approximation where we got rid of the memory effects. And we can plot all these transitions here and calculate now the width of the zero line function. Because this width, as you see in theory, is very small. And the width here in the experiment is much broader. And this has to do with that there are a lot of off-resonant transitions involved here. So, and this width of the transition that can be plotted then as a function of temperature and as a function of carrier density in these off-resonant states. And you do see that you get numbers which are well below the radiative defacing, so that contributes in explaining this finite width of the zero of the zero density of the zero phonon line. So my next example, I just want to show you that we are able to look at strong pulsed excitation. So we include an electric field in the Hamiltonian, and we do not only have now absorption, but we also have stimulated emission, because the pulse is coming due to the Pauli blocking. It fills the electronic level and re-emission starts because of the Pauli blocking. And this is typical for Rabi oscillation. And I think this is as a function of time. And I think this is very similar to what we heard in the morning, where we had this electron transfer between two levels, which have been coupled. And this is just coupled by the radiation field. So this is a very simple simple application here but for these two-level quantum mechanics. However, what we do see now, if we switch on the phonons, we do destroy this coherence. So here you see the free calculation. You get these nice oscillations here. However, with including the phonons, you do see that the coherence is lost and that the electron from the upper level cannot come down again to have the full cycle, which is implied in the two-level quantum mechanics. Okay, we can also compare this to experiments, but here we do already see that there's a lot of work to do. Already, they do see in the experiment here from Paderborn, they do see the decay of these coherent oscillations. However, what we do actually see at the moment is we see a short decay, but then a revival of these oscillations. So this might be because there are not enough interactions in the Hamiltonian so far. For instance, the coupling to these off-resonant states, they have not been included here. So there's some work to do. I just want to briefly mention that we also can apply this to different fields of spectroscopy. Like, we can look at the time dependence of fluorescence. We can look at the time dependence of Raman scattering and Rayleigh scattering. So there's a whole field where these calculations can be applied. Okay, this was the simplest model system I do have. Next thing would be just look at the next step of the theory, which is graphene. And here we do have something like looked at the relaxation of electrons and hot phonons. So that means the phonons, they are getting now that hot because they take all the energy from the electrons, that we have to solve similar equations for the electrons and for the phonons. And these are these typical Boltzmann-like equations, which you do see here. You have in and out scattering in a state k of the electrons at the band I, and you have scattering rates. They are now calculated in tight binding approximation, and you have phonon distribution and electron distribution, and they are coupled now. Both of them as a function of time, and even the phonon dynamics now fulfills a similar equation, which I do not want to look at. So just having this electron phonon dynamics, I don't have to tell you what's going on in graphene. You have this linear band structure, and what we look at the situation is that we apply a short light pulse here, and this light pulse then brings electrons from the valence band into the conduction band, then the phonons set in, you get scattering with the phonons, they take energy away, and the electrons are scattered down here. So we have done the calculation, and I just want to show you this picture here, where as a function of kinetic energy, we have plotted the distribution function of the hot electrons in the conduction band. So first, you start from an equilibrium situation here. Some of the electrons at the elevated temperature are here in the conduction band. Then you apply the short pulse. You get this this non-equilibrium distribution here. Then the phonons come into play. They try to re-establish the equilibrium function as a function of time here. Then you see here something like an equilibrium, but however, it's not a full equilibrium, and this has something to do with the fact that at the same time, you build up a huge number of phonons here, of non-equilibrium phonons, so the phonons cannot take over the energy from the electron system, and you get stuck after like already 20 to 40 femtoseconds because the phonons are so hot. Okay, you can also compare this to experiments and figure out the temperature, and it's at a reasonable level of agreement. Because I'm running out of time, I would like to show my last example, which is actually where we took these Cohn-Chem orbitals and calculated now, again, such a master equation, a Boltzmann-like equation here, the time derivative of the distribution of electrons in a band N with wave number K. And this is scattered around with outscattering and inscattering into this state with matrix elements coming, calculated now with the Cohn-Chem orbitals. And we applied these dynamical equations to a silicon surface. And this is now joint work with the Fritz Haber Institute, done by a joint PhD student, Norbert Bücking. And at the silicon surface, that's well known that there's, because of reconstruction, there's a charge transfer, and you generate a new state, a surface state, at the silicon surface. And in addition to the surface states, of course, you have also bulk states. And our interest was now in the time scale of the electron transfer between surface and bulk states. So we asked for that question, can we somehow figure out a time scale? And the time scale should be determined by the phonons in the system. So how long does it take to emit a phonon to bring the electron from one state to the other state? So, and all these matrix elements, they are now calculated with these Cohn-Chem orbitals in LDA. So first, our point was to make sure that we describe this layer of silicon in a proper way. And we tested several numbers of layers to get the band structure here. Here you do always see the layer and the band structure. And my main point I would like to address here is that you need to have for an efficient relaxation, because the phonons have only a finite energy, you have to have a dense enough band structure in these layers. Here you do see there's a large splitting between different bands, and the point is that then the phonons cannot bridge the energy between these two-dimensional bands. So you will get, for instance, layer-dependent relaxation processes as a function of time in these structures. So we used a simple model for the phonons, so just a constant optical phonon mode and an approximated acoustical phonon modes, and solved these kinetic equations. As I told you in the beginning, just here are the scattering rates, they're coming in the phonon numbers, these interaction matrix elements, the delta functions for the energy conservation of a scattering process, and after the optical excitation within the surface, the electrons scatter now here around, and via phonon emission. And this is the result we got, and I showed you this as an appetizer at the beginning of the talk. So starting from a sample which is in equilibrium, the pulse excites electron at the surface of the sample. These electrons can propagate through the sample and come back to the surface. And at the time scale from zero, where the pulse is applied, to let's say like 50 femtoseconds, where we do have two time scales. And our analysis, this is then the last thing I would like to show, shows the following, that most of the electrons are generated by the optical excitation from the valence band to the conduction band in the surface states. And the surface states, they have now two possibilities to scatter. They can go to the bulk states, or they can go via the surface states to the thermodynamical best suited state, which is down here at the surface band. So this is, it turns out that this is a very fast process. However, the scattering here to the bulk state is also fast. However, then all the electrons which come to the bottom of the bulk bands, they do have a hard time to come back to the surface bands, because then you have the main process by the acoustic phonons, and these acoustic phonons, that takes a much longer time to get them again back to the thermodynamically appropriate state. So I don't want to go through the details of the distribution function, and I think I should end at this point. And I hope that I've shown you that with the density matrix dynamics, you can, and appropriate matrix elements, you can go through a whole class of materials and can discuss these temporal spatial dynamics for different systems. Thanks.
Thank you. Are there some questions? Over there, two of them. Okay.
In your last example, you used LDA for calculating the phonons. Is there a special reason for that?
Actually, the matrix element was done like that we had the Cohn-Chem orbitals in LDA. The phonons, they are just bulk phonons. They didn't include the surface phonons. This was a weakness here in the calculation. And it was just numerical reasons that we did it like this. This was our first example and everything.
But the phonons are done with LDA or so?
Yeah. This is the... Sorry, there. Yeah. Actually, this was this figure I showed in the middle of the talk. I can show that again, where we had actually we took for evaluating the
somewhere in there.
Yeah, no. it must be at the end.
Yeah, it's before that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here, there. This is the one. So we approximated all these phonons by a single optical mode here. For this, with a straight line, this has the implication is, and the reason why we did this is because we have to do these delta functions here. And therefore, this would be very hard to do all these integrals. You must imagine we do the integrals at each time step of the time propagation. And then we need in each time step to do these delta functions to get the energy conserving processes. And then it's much more easier if you have an analytic formula here to do these delta functions. So it was a numerical reason. It's not a principal problem with the method. It's a question of computing time.
Okay, there's another question there and then here. Go ahead,
thank you. So I would like to ask a question about this memory term in the quantum kinetics.
Yes.
And if I may, I would like to pose this as a sort of two-part question. Now, first of all, let's consider the quantum dot embedded in the wetting layer, so it's a continuum of phonons. You have a phonon bath there.
Yes.
So your memory should have sort of a long range, but also short range part. So I was wondering about the time scales at which
yes.
the system forgets. And the second part is, let's say you apply your formalism to a finite system, let's say a small cluster, mm-hmm. no phonon cavities, no phonons, no optical cavities.
Yes.
So just the finite system. So there, your memory should be such that, you know, the energy doesn't get, I mean, there's no dissipation there. So electronic energy goes into phonon degrees of freedom and back. So there's a recurrence term where it comes back. So your approximations for the memory term should contain that physics, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. This is the case. So it actually... both of these problems are related to these equations, and they are in here. So because there's at this stage there's no approximation. So the second part was in a small system. Then the point is that if you go with all the dissipated energy to the phonon system, let's say this has a small number of degrees of freedom, like one mode or something. Then you would have to write down similar equations for this operator here, for the bath operator, and you would solve that on the same footing as this equation. Because it's a small system, this is probably done, and you get then the interference between this free propagation and this, coupled with this, and then you get this bouncing back and forth. So you get an additional equation. This would be the answer to the second part. The first part was, I should then, this is contained here. So if you are asking basically at the memory time of the bath, is this the question? Yeah. So the memory time of the bath would come into this exponential. So if you do, for instance, a second order cumulant expansion, then you would get a correlation function of these Liouville operators for the bath. And if you then trace the system, then you do get a certain memory depth in this thing here, in this exponent. So you don't get it in second order perturbation theory, but you get it in a higher order perturbation theory. We didn't include this for the calculations here, only for the graphene, but not for the surface. For the surface, we had not the back action in, and everything was so, all the states were so so dense that it didn't make sense to include that, yeah.
I didn't understand this repopulation of the surface electron state of silicon.
Yeah.
It seems very unphysical. Is this a finite slab effect?
We think that it has to do something with the finite slab. However, so that the coming back time is longer and longer, the thicker the slab gets. However, because you distribute more and more the electrons, however, it has something to do with the equilibrium state. So you always would expect that all the electrons go to the bottom of the band, right? And the surface band is the lowest available state here in the system.
Nice.
So at the end state, they should be there. The time will depend on that, but they should be there at the end.
Okay. Question?
Okay, just a quick question. Actually, in the initial Hamiltonian, you had a real many body term.
Yes.
How did you treat that then in the different examples? I mean,
yeah, with the real many body term, you mean the Coulomb interaction. I didn't show any examples for the Coulomb interaction. That's why I said at this point I could have given a similar talk on the electron interaction. I chose the electron phonon interaction because the aspects could be in 30 minutes transported. However, you can write down a similar equations for the electron-electron. Then you do have the memory terms. They include then screening and scattering. And you do have a term without memory. They include Hartree-Fock. So, and then it depends again on the system, what you take seriously then into account.
There's a question over there. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, so each dimer on your silicon surface,
yes,
has a, if you think about the isolated dimer, has a very well lying triplet state.
Yeah.
And so when you have this collection of dimers and you assemble these, you get all sorts of spin states.
Yeah.
And I would think that your initially prepared state could begin decaying into these higher multiplicity states, and that's going to phenomenally impact the dynamics. I don't think that's in the theoretical model.
This is true. This is not in the model. However, it will depend, because you excite optically, it will depend on the matrix, on the optical matrix
right.
element.
So your initially prepared state may be a single,
yeah,
but you've got this high density of triplet, quintet, all
yeah,
these higher
yeah,
multiplicities.
But they need to have an optical matrix element, because we use optical excitation right, to do that. Otherwise, they can only be populated via the phonon interaction. But if they do have an optical matrix element, that could change the dynamics, yes.
I was thinking that they could get populated through the spin orbit terms.
Yeah, we start with with the ground state, all electrons in the valence band, and then the optics is coming in
right,
and brings electrons from the valence to the conduction band. And
right,
then
from
it will,
there they can
yeah,
cross over due to spin over coupling to
yeah,
a lot of
yeah,
multiplicities.
But this is not in the theory, yeah. This is not included here.
Okay, well then I think we should conclude. Thanks for the nice talk. Thanks to the audience for questions. And we're a couple of minutes late, but be here promptly on time at 3:50 for the next part of the session. Ah, that was good.